You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Welcome, everybody. Take heart. There may be some justice on the baseball field yet this afternoon, everybody. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Just a little live baseball update. The first inning was pretty brutal for our fearless Brewers this afternoon. It is the bottom of the second inning. The Cubs are up 4-1. Brewer pitching was having a wee bit of a problem finding the strike zone. So stay tuned. Lots of baseball yet to play. Hopefully a little truth, justice, and the American way for our goodly underdog Brewers as ever and always. Also, I just wanted to make a couple of notes. We talked yesterday about the fact that Donald Trump, in an interview, press gaggle in the Oval Office, had noted that he may not try to pay workers that have been furloughed if they're not friendly to Trump. It was a very bizarre statement. He basically implied, like, hey, if you're a Trump supporter, you'll get paid your back wages, but if you're not, you won't. I mean, query how they figure that out. I wanted to add this note to that, and this credit goes to a news organization called GovExec.com. They broke yesterday that the Office of Management and Budget on Friday revised public shutdown guidance on their website to remove references to a law passed in 2019 in the wake of the first shutdown under Trump 1.0. That specific guidance from the OMB, it was a document titled Frequently Asked Questions During a Lapse in Appropriations, meaning a shutdown. And it said very clearly that under this 2019 law, the Government Employees Fair Treatment Act, that furloughed and accepted federal workers will receive back pay. It's federal law. Well, the OMB just magically deleted that last week, which is concerning, to say the least. And very bizarrely, the Office of Personnel Management still has the guidance under the 2019 law up on its website. So just very strange. Also, just a bit of factual reminders as the shutdown drags on. Here is where we're at in terms of potential hospital closures, nursing home closures, and clinic closures. We're right at a count of about 500 of those that are either already closed or slated to close. This is according to an organization called Protect Our Care as a result of the big brutal bill. And in addition, per the KFF, the Kaiser Family Foundation, it is far more the case on a percentage of population basis that Republican-held House districts, they have higher percentages of their population that rely on those ACA subsidies, which has been the specific ask of Democrats in order to reopen the government. Meaning, Democrats have said, hey, please restore funding for those ACA subsidies so people don't see their health insurance premiums doubling, tripling, or worse. And the states that will see the highest premium increases, if Republicans and Donald Trump don't come to the bargaining table to restore these subsidies, are the following. And just think about whether these are red or blue states. Here are the states with the highest premium increases. West Virginia, Wyoming, Alaska, Tennessee, Mississippi, Texas, South Carolina, Alabama, and Christy Noem's own South Dakota. Top 10. Anywho, that'll do it for our little news and factoid updates at the top of the hour. Again, we'll continue to keep you posted on the Brewers-Cubs score. I am really excited to bring back to the show two of my favorite guests, both of these gentlemen now with an organization called the Democracy Defense Project. One is former chair of the Wisconsin Democratic Party, Mike Tate, as well as former Republican Congressman Scott Klug. Welcome back, Mike. Welcome back, Scott. It's great to have you both with us.
Thanks for having us.
Glad to be here.
Great to have you. I just wanted to ask you both what your thoughts were. We had a very interesting decision from a Waukesha County Circuit Court judge earlier this week that basically said the Wisconsin Elections Commission has to verify the citizenship of all registered voters and newly registered voters before the February primary cycle. There are a lot of questions about whether or not that's even logistically possible. The order doesn't get into those specifics at all, doesn't really deal with the practicalities of such. And since we're going to be talking about ensuring that our electoral processes work well and the confidence level that we can all have in our election processes, I just thought we should start there. Mike, reactions from you in the wake of that ruling from Waukesha County this week.
Well, I can jump in. I mean, I'll be honest, I have been following that case just sort of in the periphery. I mean, I think that what I'd say is that's going to play out through the legal process. What I know, and I know this because, you know, folks like myself and Congressman Klug and...
Oh, Mike, I think we lost you. Jacob, are you getting Mike? Mike, if you can get as close as you can to your microphone so we don't lose you.
How's that?
Yeah, there
you
go.
Can you hear me now?
Yes, okay. go ahead.
I haven't been paying too much attention. I know it's still winding its way through the legal process. But, you know, I think what, you know, I firmly believe already is that we have a very, very sound election process here in Wisconsin. There's some work being done right now at the Capitol in Madison to try to see if we can make some improvements that I think would, provide citizens with more trust in the process. I think we have extraordinarily safe, sound, and secure elections already. And I know that's what we're here to talk about. And I think the case you're talking about, we're going to see how it plays out in the courts, but I don't think we have non-citizens voting in Wisconsin right now. I think that people who register to vote are able to vote, and you can vote absentee, you can vote in person, you can vote early in person. You know, we have all sorts of ways to cast ballots and count them accurately, and that's what has happened, and that's what's going to keep happening.
And Mike, forgive me for asking you what may be a completely obvious question, but at no point in time have Democrats ever wanted non-citizens to vote, correct?
I chaired the Democratic Party for 6 years. We only are looking to get the votes of citizens. That's sort of how this works. You know, we're not, non-citizens can't vote. I am unaware of any effort by anybody to ever sort of drive. I think that that's sort of one of the mythical fairy tales that gets spread out there sometimes. I'm sure Congressman Klug never was a part of any meeting where they're like, how do we get some non-citizens to vote?
Let me just jump in. Congressman Klug, your reactions to the Waukesha County ruling earlier this week.
Well, we're early in advance, right? This is an initial order.
Yes.
The state Justice Department's fighting it already. I don't really know what the mechanism is in place to verify those, because how somebody registered to vote in 2018, how can you track them down and verify where they are today? It may be a more immediate request, like voter ID. When people register in the future, they have to prove it. But you'll have to have documents other than driver's license, because they don't check to see whether you're an immigrant if you get a license in most states to drive. But I agree with you. I don't think there's any way in the world they can get this resolved through the judicial system and then actually do it by the spring elections. It's just impossible to do. Mike's also right, you know, that we're in this along with J.B. Van Holland and also Mandela Barnes, essentially trying to convince the public that Wisconsin has no history of voting fraud, has no issues of election fraud. And we think the system as it is works very well, although we do want to see some changes. And from my perspective, I've always been a supporter of photo ID in order to allow somebody to register to vote. And I wouldn't have any ideas at all whatsoever if they required you to, when you register, that you have to prove your citizenship. But there's no way in the world they're going to roll this back before the spring election. If this becomes a decision that sticks, it's something that's going to happen in the elections in 26.
Yeah, I agree with both of you there. There's going to be appeals here. And just on the topic of voter ID, I'll just say this. This is my opinion, not my guest opinion. This is one of those things that I think that is the law in the state of Wisconsin. If folks are concerned that voter ID is a barrier for citizens to vote, or for folks that might be disabled or college students. The effort should be made to ensure that folks have an easy pathway to get those IDs so they can vote. In my mind, this is a done issue. We have voter ID in the state. That's what the law is. Let's ensure that everybody who's legally entitled to vote knows and feels that their vote will count, and that they have a pathway to ensure that they have an opportunity to vote and express their opinion. These are challenging times here, and our democracy will be better off if we have greater voter participation and people feel like their vote is respected. So let's return to that, Mike. Tell our listeners a little bit about what the Democracy Defense Project is all about. Representative Klug mentioned the involvement of former Lieutenant Governor Mandela Barnes, former Republican Attorney General J.B. Van Hollen. What's the DDP all about?
Well, I mean, it's a pretty easy concept. I mean, we've got, you know, this board of, you know, two Democrats, myself and former Lieutenant Governor Barnes, and two Republicans, former Congressman Klug and our former Attorney General Van Hollen, who have had a lot of experience of elections, you know, through the years. And I believe we all know and have a lot of faith and trust in our elections as they are. We've done some research to see what people feel and what voters in Wisconsin feel about the elections. And we want to try to address any part where, or any, you know, areas where it come up where citizens are like, hey, you know, look, Maggie, I think it's a fair question for your average voter that lives in anywhere outside of Milwaukee, be like, so why do all these votes come in Milwaukee like super late in the evening? Right. There's a really reasonable explanation for that, and we can get rid of, you know, we can prevent that from happening. But we're really trying to seek to break down barriers, do it in a very bipartisan way, and make sure people understand via the work of the Democracy Defense Project that Wisconsin elections are safe and secure, and you can take that to the bank.
Representative Klug, you're not really from the Milwaukee area, but you know why it takes longer for votes to get counted coming out of Milwaukee and Dane counties. Educate folks that are listening. There's nothing nefarious there. There's no there. There's just more people there. So it takes longer because they can't open a single ballot until Election Day. Am I getting that right, Representative?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, what's happened is those late night trucks have become part of, you know, the mythology about voting fraud in Wisconsin. And people have analyzed it like the Zapruder film, going back and forth to see this truck and who's handling that box and who's opening that envelope. What Mike and I are involved and our colleagues are involved with is to try to do in Wisconsin what we do a lots of places around the country, which is to allow ballots to be counted the Monday before Election Day in order to speed up the process. And my Republican friends who get queasy about this, I meant for God's sakes, they do early voting and early voting counts in Florida and Texas and far larger states. And frankly, I think it's an embarrassment when you're watching election returns come in on election night and they've called the elections in Florida and Texas and we haven't even started counting absentee ballots. So one of the things we're pushing is a state legislation that would allow early voting and so that we don't have the sort of Milwaukee conspiracy theory stick with us in years to come.
Folks, we're going to continue to talk about these reforms with former Wisconsin Democratic Party Chair Mike Tate and former Republican Congressman Scott Klug. Don't go anywhere. Democracy is the discussion next.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Welcome back, one and all. I'm Maggie Dawn. This is the Civic Media Radio Network. Brewers continuing to have a wee bit of a problem finding the strike zone. It is the bottom of the third, still 4-1 Cubs. Two men on base for the Cubs, no outs. Again, I'll continue to keep us all posted. Go Crew. Right now, I know I've got two great Brewers fans and gentlemen that know a bunch about our election systems here in the state of Wisconsin. Former Democratic State Party Chair Mike Tate, along with former Republican Congressman Scott Klug, both of the Democracy Defense Project. Scott, right before the break, we were talking about this idea that in our largest population centers, we have a lot of early votes, meaning folks that utilize the absentee ballot process in the state of Wisconsin. It continues to be the law in the state of Wisconsin. that elections officials can't even open the envelope containing folks' ballots until election day. And this is causing major delays. Scott, as a Republican, why do you support and why do you think we all should get behind legislation that will permit elections officials to get those at least the envelopes opened or at best the counts started for those absentee ballots that have been received?
Yeah, and you'll see that actually a lot of states around the country already do this. As I mentioned, in Republican precincts in Florida and Texas, there's widespread support for doing this. And what happens is you count the votes early, and then you store the totals in a position where both Republicans and Democrats can see them and review. And when the polls close on Tuesday, you pull out the sheet and you're ready to go. And that's why Florida and Texas get called much earlier than Wisconsin. In Minnesota, there's another way you can do this, is you don't necessarily start counting them, but you can verify that a ballot comes in, is legal, and you know there's a signature on it, and it meets all the standards. And in that case, you can open them, but you actually don't start scanning them until the election closes at 8 o'clock. But as Mike knows as well as I do, if you can't open them, then you got to figure out a way to verify them. You got to try to get them to flatten in to go through the scan and everything else. So at the end of the day, I mean, it just makes common sense to solve this. And we've got a bipartisan group in the state legislature, Republicans and Democrats, who are trying to get it done. And Mike and I and the rest of our colleagues on this project are all firmly behind it.
Mm-hmm. Mike, we also, during the break, talked a little bit about the recent Supreme Court ruling on drop boxes and the Democracy Defense Project. You all have a perspective on this. They are legal in the state of Wisconsin, but yep. But tell us where we really should be aiming to end up when it comes to drop boxes, which, again, folks, are secure receptacles that receive our early absentee ballots.
Yeah, and I think this is really important. I think it's something a lot of people, we know through the polling, the Democracy Defense Project is an overwhelmingly popular idea. If your county or municipality, you know, wants to have a drop box, you're allowed to do so. We think that having uniform rules around that, make a lot of sense, you know. And I mean, I always joke, I've never heard of a drop box before COVID in 2020, but what it is another, it's basically just what it sounds like. It's a drop box that is secured, likely in a secure position. I know here in where I live in the village of Whitefish Bay, it's, you know, inside the locked village hall building. You can just stop in there and drop it off. But having standard protocols for how these drop boxes are handled municipality, I think makes just as much sense as we have standard protocols for how we handle voting machines that we use on election day. This is really a common sense thing. And I know that there's some, you know, Democrats and Republicans in Madison working together right now, trying to figure out if we can get to a place where we can get an actual bill through that doesn't just deal with this drop box issue, but does also hopefully allow us to start processing all of these early votes that are cast as well. So, you know, we shouldn't be following not just Texas and Florida, but I believe California and New York and being able to report our results.
Yes.
And
it shuts down so much of the, frankly, like conspiracy theory spinning that ends up happening. Scott, you were also mentioning, and folks, if you're just joining us, we got former chair of the Dem Party, Mike Tate, with us alongside former Republican Congressman Scott Klug. They're both with the Democracy Defense Project. Representative, we were talking about the fact during the break that both of these things, starting to count absentee ballots before Election Day, or at least opening the envelopes and getting the ballots ready for processing, verifying signatures and addresses, as well as standardizing drop box procedures, are incredibly popular amongst Wisconsin voters, regardless of party. Is that accurate? And two, if that's true, what's the problem with our elected officials?
Well, yeah, that you don't have enough time on the show to cover that. But I think it just gets caught in sort of this crazy back and forth that dominates all the elections. If you want to look at a group who supports both of these measures, the folks who actually run elections in, you know, local right. clerks, county clerks are all very supportive of this measure. We actually just did a meeting up in Wausau the end of last week, and we had a number of local clerks from around the state who attended that, who all sort of, you know, metaphorically applauded everything that Mike and I and Mandela and JB are trying to get done for this. So they're the folks who are in there. They know the chaos it causes by the rules that are in place. And like, and I think we've all said, we're one of maybe 20 states in the country that doesn't allow both of these reforms. And it's for a, you know, a state that started the secret ballot with Bob La Follette at the turn of the 20th century, right. you would think we'd be at the front of the curve, but we're not in these two measures.
Folks, that is former Republican Representative Scott Klug, my friend and yours, as well as former head of the Wisconsin Democratic Party, Mike Tate, also now my friend and yours. You can find out more about the Democracy Defense Project and these bipartisan proposals at democracydefenseproject.org. When we come back, I discuss Republican candidate for the Supreme Court. We all know it's partisan these days. Maria Lazar. And her lack of knowledge about basic legal history in these United States. Don't go anywhere, folks. I'm Maggie Dawn, and this is the Civic Media Radio Network. Welcome back, everybody. Welcome, if you're just joining us. I'm Maggie Dawn, and this is the Civic Media Radio Network. Big thanks to former chair of the Democratic Party, Mike Tate, and former Republican Representative Scott Klug of the Democracy Defense Project for joining me to talk about couple of basic election reforms here in the state of Wisconsin that would do so very much to increase voter confidence in our election systems. Of course, we should start at least opening our absentee ballots and getting them out of the envelopes and verifying signatures and addresses before Election Day. And of course, there should be legislation to uniformize the rules around drop boxes in every single jurisdiction and municipality. I mean, duh, it doesn't have to be this hard. Folks, just a little update on the Milwaukee Brewers. It is the top of the fourth inning. It remains 4-1. Ladies and gentlemen, Jake Bowers is on the mound. There is one out, and there are two men on base. Sal Frelick starting the Brewers off this inning with a single, followed up by 5'7", Caleb Durbin. Man, is he a cute little one, isn't he? 5'7", just a little pint size baseball player. He singled as well. So you got men on first and the second. Jake Bowers at the plate, only one out here in the bottom or top of the fourth inning. Folks, I want to spend the next segment talking about Supreme Court candidate Maria Lazar, but we've got one of our longtime listeners and callers on the line who wanted to get his two cents in. If you would like to do the same, 855-752-4842, 855-75-CIVIC. We're going to be talking about Judge Lazar's eyebrow-raising, head-scratchingly tone-deaf display of ignorance on a right-wing talk radio show earlier or late last week. We're going to get there in a moment, but let's hear from Jack from Merrimack. Hey, Jack, what's going on, brother? What you want to share with us this afternoon?
Well, I guess a couple of things. First of all, you're right, longtime listener and participant, going back as far as when the Devil's Advocates were on Civic Media. So,
my esteemed predecessors in this time slot, indeed, sir.
Yes. What I wanted to say is a couple of things regarding these voting proposals. First of all, I do not like the term drop boxes. It's a convenient term, but it's also kind of negative. I would prefer that they be called official ballot collection boxes, which is what they are.
Yes.
And the second thing is, I'm wondering if, you know, if this whole reform gets scuttled, I'm wondering if it isn't legal to start counting the ballots as early as midnight on election day. That is to say that, you know, the midnight hour before, or 12:01 before the polls even open.
I believe that that is actually what is happening. I will have to go and verify. That's a great question, Jack. But my understanding is that they can begin to open the envelopes at 12:01 a.m. It doesn't help that much because of the volume, and especially in 2020, during the COVID period of time where we had just an absolute glut of absentee ballots, that didn't solve the problem. But that's a great question. I love it when listeners give me homework. So I'll find that out for you, Jack. I appreciate you calling and listening, my friend. You be well. Go Brewers. We've now got runners on second and third with two outs. So fingers crossed here. Oh, we scored. It's 4-2, everybody. So I'm going to keep you posted this afternoon. But let us focus and talk a bit about Judge Maria Lazar. She was on Vicki McKenna's show on WISN on October 1st, and she was being asked questions about Supreme Court precedent and when courts should overrule precedent. And she gave a mind-bogglingly bizarre answer. So I want to listen to it, and I'm going to explain to you why what she says here demonstrates her ignorance of critically important legal history, but also American history. And the fact that the case that she's getting wrong is one of the most infamous in our nation's history should cause, again, anyone of good faith, serious pause when we get to our Supreme Court elections in 2026. Take a listen. This is Supreme Court candidate, current Judge Maria Lazar, responding to a question about when courts should overturn longstanding precedent.
That's another problem that we have. I understand that precedent doesn't mean that you never overturn a case. I mean, there are cases, for example, Dred Scott and some other appalling cases that the U.S. Supreme Court issued that deservedly should have been overturned. But there's also a way to do that. And those cases were overturned after decades of being wrong, but being there.
Okay. A bit of American history and American legal history. Dred Scott was the decision in 1857 that the United States Constitution did not extend citizenship to black folks. And so they were not entitled to any of the rights and privileges guaranteed to folks under the Constitution. It is considered to be the worst decision in the history of American jurisprudence. Okay? It contains overtly racist language. It is poorly reasoned. Because effectively, you're saying that some human beings aren't human beings and therefore don't get rights. And it basically nationalized slavery, right? Because this was the Supreme Court saying, this is completely fine that a group of people don't have any rights, deserve no protection, and can be treated as property. It led in many ways, shapes, and form to the American Civil War 4 years later. So this is the worst of the worst. And basically, you could ask almost any first-year law student, has the Dred Scott case ever been overturned as precedent? And they all would know that it has never been overturned by the Supreme Court. It was rendered null and void following the Civil War by the 13th and 14th Amendments to the Constitution. But that worst case in American history remains on the books. Wisconsin Supreme Court Justice candidate Judge Maria Lazar didn't know that. Here's what she said. I understand that precedent doesn't mean that you never overturn a case. Okay, let me translate the doublespeak there. Yes, the Supreme Court can overturn its prior rulings and decide differently. Think about Roe v. Wade. It was overturned by Dobbs, okay? The judge continues. I mean, there are cases, for example, Dred Scott and some other appalling cases that the U.S. Supreme Court issued that deservedly should have been overturned, but there's also a way to do that. And those cases were overturned after decades of being wrong, but being there. She thinks Dred Scott was overturned. It never was. And when a court, the Supreme Court, does something like declare that certain human beings aren't human and don't deserve rights, those decisions don't deserve to remain for a minute or 5 minutes, let alone decades. But that seems to be a concept escaping Judge Lazar's understanding. And given that we now have a Supreme Court that has declared that presidents are kings, and given that Stephen Miller, Deputy Chief of Staff, said yesterday on CNN that the president has plenary authority, meaning unlimited, unbounded, unchecked, exclusive authority to deploy the National Guard and by extension the military on the citizenry of the United States, in effect declaring that there should be a dictatorship, again, jet fueled by the Supreme Court's prior decision declaring the presidents are kings. Judge Lazar's failure to understand perhaps the most important an infamous decision in Supreme Court history, and one of the most important times in American history, is deeply, deeply concerning. Given that Judge Kavanaugh wrote a decision recently that said that it is perfectly acceptable for federal immigration and law enforcement officials to racially profile people as long as race is one of a number of factors. And by the way, all of the other factors were proxies for race. So basically, we're just saying that, yep, you can use race to decide to police people differently than other people. When that same conservative majority of the Supreme Court said that, of course, you can't consider race if we're talking about university admissions, Judge Lazar's failure to understand accurately American history, the history of our Civil War, the history of the 13th and 14th Amendments, and the history of the Dred Scott case, the worst in our nation's history, is absolutely unacceptable. I'm embarrassed for her. And I hope that every voter in Wisconsin comes to know this about Judge Lazar. And I hope that this was simply Judge Lazar misspeaking, not refreshing her recollection, not being careful about her discussion of racism and the history of racism in this country. I hope that's what it was. Because if it wasn't that, then what actually is she saying? Is this some dog whistle to the likes of David Duke and white supremacists in this country? Regardless, whether by misspeak or ignorance, to get this wrong, again, a question that even first-year law students would get right, that many constitutional professors, con law professors, would say, if you can't get this question right on your law school exam, you don't get to graduate from law school because it's that important. But a candidate for this state's Supreme Court would not pass that exam and wouldn't be able to graduate from law school if that was the most basic standard for passage and graduation. A sad moment. When we come back, I want to hear from you. What's your favorite sport? Is it baseball like me, or is it something else? In this Wednesday's edition of Over the Hump and Trump, let's take a breath together. 855-752-4842. That's 855-75-CIVIC.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Welcome back, everybody. Welcome if you're just joining me. My name's Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. It is Wednesday, and I haven't done this segment for a while. And I think we all need a little break from the politics. We call it Over the Hump and Trump because it is, of course, Wednesday, and we all need to sometimes, you know, not talk about Donald Trump. And today, given the fact that we're in October, we got the Brewers in the playoffs. By the way, folks, it's still the top of the fifth inning. Brewers 2, Cubs 4, with two outs, Bryce Terang at the plate. Given the fact that we've got the Brewers in the playoffs, it is deep into October. It is football season. We got the Badgers and we got the Packers. High school football big in almost all of our communities. And of course, if you've been watching sports news across the state of Wisconsin, some rumors going around that Giannis Antetokounmpo might be up on the trading block or a team possibly trying to negotiate a trade of our standout star here in Milwaukee. So I thought it was just an appropriate time to ask each and every one of you, out of the Bucks, the Badgers, the Brewers, and the Pack, which is your favorite team and why? What is your favorite sports season? Do you try to get in the Brewers games and the Packers games in October when we've got overlap of these seasons going all the way into September as well? How diehard are you for Wisconsin sports? 855-752-4842, 855-75-CIVIC. I have to start with something about the Brewers game that I was at with my dad this past Monday. It feels like it was already a week ago. I am, as you all know, a huge, huge Brewers fan. Grew up watching. I was a wee little thing in 1982 and 83, where the Brewers, again in 82, went to the World Series. Absolute heartbreaker in 83, where they got the 13 wins and we had the George Webb giveaway. My dad and I were at the game on Monday. And so for me, as you all might guess, baseball is my number one sport. I tend to allocate my sports watching time when we got overlap of these seasons to baseball first. Until the Brewers are done, I really can't get my brain to focus on the Packers at all. But one of the things that has stood out to me is the importance and the changes that have been made to umpiring and refereeing in these three major sports leagues in the United States: football, basketball, and of course baseball. There is now, you know, a tape review in baseball for certain plays, but not for others. There has been changes made to how refereeing in football is done. There aren't really that many changes to how refereeing has been done in basketball, despite the fact that I think in the game of basketball, a ref can really have an enormous impact on the game. Of course, there are calls in football that come down to literally a matter of inches or toes. But again, the fact that they can review that tape, they got camera angles from all over the place. In my mind, it really is basketball most likely that a referee can have the biggest impact if they're not doing their job well. The only exception to that analysis, in my opinion, is a home plate umpire in baseball. Because in a game like baseball, without a clock, and where pitch counts deeply matter to the psychological strength and confidence of either a batter or a pitcher, given the circumstances, when a home plate umpire is getting things wrong, it can absolutely alter the outcome of the game. And if, as I did, You went and watched the film Just a Bit Outside, which chronicles the Brewers World Series run. There are many baseball aficionados that would say that the Brewers, that the tide broke against the Brewers and that we were robbed of a World Series championships because of a single missed strike call. All of this, my friends, brings me back to this past Monday's game. Now, ultimately, the Brewers won that game. But by the end of that baseball contest, the fans in that stadium were absolutely tired and angry at the home plate umpire. So I did a little research in these last couple of days about that home plate umpire's accuracy ratings. And I was not surprised to find out, my friends, that while Major League home plate umpires' accuracy ratings are generally at 93%, meaning they get their balls and strike calls correct, generally at 93%, if not better. The gentleman who umpired at home plate for this past Monday's game, his accuracy rating was at 91%. Now, that might not sound like a bunch, but where you have an incredibly close contest, it is extremely impactful. And in fact, there were three instances where the umpire missed calls against the Brewers that had absolutely tipping point critical moments. The Brewers and their pitching staff recovered, but they actually can rate what the overall runs impact of the error rate of the pitcher, of the home plate umpire is, if you get what I'm saying, right? So what does the error rate translate into in terms of a run advantage for either team? Monday's umpire was so bad that it translated into a half run advantage for the Chicago Cubs. Let's hope that the home plate umpire at Wrigley right now is doing a far better job of it. We leave you this afternoon with the Cubs still up 4, Brewers at 2 in the bottom of 5. A man on first, no outs. Folks, go Crew. I'll stand up for you. I hope you stand up for me. But it's always better when we stand together for our Milwaukee Brewers.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.